Okay, so once again, we're reading from the writings of the Rabash. The article is called Time of Redemption. You can ask questions on CAB TV. Selected questions related to the theme of the lesson will be aired. So once again, the article is called Time of Redemption. A quote from the Bible that in the 10th day, the Dan Achiezer ben Amishadai. The time of redemption is coming, and it is upon us to bring ourselves to light, into redemption, which is coming out of slavery. And it is known that you can't come out from the exile before you are in exile, and it is known that the Torah is eternal and exists in each and every generation. And it is known, it says so in the Agadah, that each and every generation a person has to see himself as if he just came out of Egypt. Thus, we have to know the matter of exile. We have to understand the exile in which we are. In each and every generation, you have to come out of that bitter exile. What is it? The Holy Ari says that there was the opinion of holiness in exile, and also that needs a clarification. And the Holy Zohar says that Se'or and Machmetzet are
Kel Nechar Elokim Acherim. ואבי המורי זצ"ל מפרש בסית רעך והקליפה ויצר
are a single degree. And Baal HaSulam interprets that this takes place in mind and also in heart, where the dominion of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and his servants are the dominion of the will to receive over the organs, meaning where all of the 613 organs, when they serve the will to receive, they are called the slaves, Pharaoh's slaves, the workers of Pharaoh. And it is known that the very first factor for the work is lolishma, that's what you begin with, meaning coming as a result of your upbringing. And this is based on the foundation of the will to receive, when a person is led to understand that the corporeal pleasures aren't that important, because eventually in this world you die, and you can get spiritual pleasure in the next world, which is an eternal world, and to merit success in corporeal pleasures, this you can do by keeping the Torah and mitzvot, thanks to which we will have salvation and plenty of abundance and success, and we shall merit a prolonged and healthy and lengthy life. And a person, on behalf of the will to receive, is lazy, meaning there are people who are satisfied by bread and water, and there are people who also need meat and fish, and there are people who need nice garments and symbols of honor, and there are people who also need nice apartments, and it's all according to a person's energy. How vigor is he? Meaning that they don't want to work more than what they need, and each and every person has his own extent of necessity, what he needs as necessity, but to work in order to bestow, that's not in man's nature. And all that is because a man was created with the will to receive for himself, and to merit true pleasures, first of all, you have to merit adhesion, which is called equivalence of form, meaning to adapt his intention for it to be for the benefit of spirituality, which is called in order to bestow, which is the measure of the Creator, which is called the bestower, and that is against nature. It is found then that one is in exile under the dominion of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and since the body is called the will to receive, thus there is no point in a person working the Creator against his will, because there is no pleasure in something that you're obliged to do, but only a life of sorrow. And this is the way of the Torah, meaning the path until you achieve Torah Lishma, for her name. So life is a life of sorrow, since it is something against your own will.
I don't know what to add, so only if you ask. Yes.
What is the article about?
About what it's about. What can I add? I told you. The article is about how we are egoists and we can't do anything but what's important to our ego. How do we approach the time of redemption? We perform what the Kabbalists advise us. Humans have two choices. Either we advance with our own nature that beats us, and then we have no choice. We'll just advance by the blows until we want to get rid of the blows, because we feel this as suffering. And this will then teach us to keep fleeing and escaping the evil, and then we'll advance. It's a long and very tough path. Or we can advance our minds to precede the blows. And as Baal HaSalam explains to us in the article, the essence of religion and its purpose, that we can raise our sensitivity like a magnifier and become very sensitive to indications on the path. It's like you say, it's like I tell you a half a word and you already get it. This is called a wise one uses the eyes in his head. And some don't pay attention. Some like writing what's being said to them, but not putting it into their heart, not really paying attention to it. So some like this, some like that. Everyone has their own fate. And then, to the extent that a person hears, accepts what is told to him, then he advances. By being willing to distinguish between his ego and the path. So what's exile and redemption, if correctly interpreted, that he's willing to withstand it, although it's unpleasant to his ego, but he begins to work on the importance to be above the ego despite the pain, despite the fact it seems like a loss to him. And each time he scrutinizes and examines new things, because once he clarified a new discernment, once it's clear, then he doesn't feel a loss, doesn't feel a sorrow in losing his ego as opposed to spiritual attainment. So then the ego must be added to him, and that's how he rises each time.
He says here, it's known that the very first factor for the work, that you begin the work from lo lishma, meaning because you were brought up to do that. Now, he says that what you got from upbringing is the Passover itself, the way you perform it. Now, among the seculars, the only two things that they keep are the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, and the Seder of the Pesach.
Baal HaSalam is not talking about this. He's not.
What does it mean, the very first factor for the work?
When you go to your mother-in-law to be with her in the holiday, this doesn't mean following the mitzvot. If she won't come, she'll get mad. It's her mitzvah.
Yeah, right. But is there any text or anything like we did with the Zohar for All, that we can make the text so that people will be able to connect to the internality of it, not simply eat around the table.
To make changes in the Haggadah? Of course not.
No, not make any changes, but you know, like delete certain words so it will be easier to read, like we did from Aramaic into Hebrew, and something that I can bring to the family as a text, something accessible so they could read about internality.
What's in the Haggadah that's so hard to read?
Because they think it's an historical, it's history.
Yeah, there's the portion about Al-Ahman. Yeah, there's, how many Aramaic is there?
They think it's about history, that it's something that once happened.
Yes, but this I can't change. The text will remain text. How you look at it as his history or spiritual degrees, that depends on you. It depends on how you read it. I can't make it easier so that you'll see it as spiritual instead of history. It's impossible. It will stay the same. And translating the Aramaic to Hebrew, how much Aramaic is there? Just a few words. Chad Gadia, Lachmania, and a few others. Well, what else is there? Owen, yeah? Right? There's not a lot of Aramaic in the Haggadah, and not too many difficult words.
How do you bring the Haggadah itself to the people?
We will try to explain it during these days, and around the holiday itself and the Haggadah, and as a result, a person will see that it's not a historical story. These are spiritual degrees by which we come out of Egypt, meaning coming out of our ego. We're always talking about it.
But it's good for people watching our channel.
Yes, but if someone is not watching or hearing, what can I do?
Nothing to do?
No, there's nothing to do. We're really addressing only those who wish to listen to us. Those who don't, how do I address them? What can I tell them? Tell me, what?
I'm asking.
No, I have nothing to say. What can I say? You want better health? Listen to the Haggadah with my interpretation. You'll be blessed with good health. What? What else? You need money? Okay, so you'll see success in everything you do.
Suppose, isn't it possible to rewrite it kind of instead of Pharaoh saying ego, Egypt, and so on?
We're always talking about it.
So can't we write such an Haggadah, the order of the
try meal? It. Try it, okay, great. Try writing it, and then give it to your mother-in-law, and let's see how will be her Passover. So basically, you want to tell her that she's immersed in her ego, in her evil inclination, and she has to rise above it finally and become a human being.
So why do we read the Haggadah, actually?
It's better to read it the way it is, and that's it. Why do we read it?
Is there a point in reading it the way it is?
Of course there is, because it still gives us some contact with the spiritual root. We're not canceling the customs, no. And you see, the nation isn't canceling its customs, and it kept the nation together for 2,000 years. No, we actually follow the customs of Passover. We even do more, because it reminds us about our inner work. That's for us. For the common people, it's like a common tradition, you know. They think about it like we were once slaves in Egypt, we built pyramids there for Pharaoh, and then we were done with it, we're out of it, finally, and this is what the common people think. We are not celebrating history, we don't care about this exodus from Egypt. Today our situation is much worse than the situation of Egypt in history. If you really compare the situation of Israel in Egypt as opposed to the situation today, you don't understand what it is. You would kiss Pharaoh's hands now just to take you back. The land of Goshen, where the people of Israel were, is the most abundant land. The crops, the sheep, cattle, you can do whatever you want. Pharaoh is controlling, meaning guarding everything. No one is touching you, no one's harming you. Everything is great. You have pots full of meat and onions and garlics and fish and whatever you want. There is no life today like there were in Egypt. But so what does it mean to be slaves? Just listen to Pharaoh. That's it. That's all you need to do. Just work according to your ego and everything's great. Everything was great. What did they cry in the desert? They cried about, where are the garlics and onions and meat and flesh, fish that we ate in Egypt? Everything was good. Where did you bring us? Where did you take us? You see, so what are we reminding to ourselves now? Did we have enemies and haters as in today? No, everything was great. So Pharaoh was in control. So what? But he guarded me. He let me do whatever I want in his country. I live in my own place, doing my own things. Everything's great. What's wrong? What does Baruch Sulam write about our life today? He writes, just let those Jews who live in Israel to go back to other places, and you'll see who's left here. Who will be left? That's it. Egypt, we have to understand, Egypt is bad only when you begin to think about exile from spirituality, from the lack of the Creator, which is called Aleph, Alufo Shel Olam, champion of the world. Then it's called exile, as opposed to spiritual redemption. Spiritual redemption. If not for that, then Egypt is full of milk and honey. Everything's wonderful. You got everything. Everything but the Creator, but an answer to what's the meaning of life. All the rest is abundantly there, filled to the brim with whatever you want. It's America, I don't know how to call it. You live like a king. What's missing? Only I want bestowal and love towards others. You hear? When you begin to want that, then Egypt seems like an exile. Because only that is not there. Love of others. You see? So what are we celebrating? We should sit down and eat well, because a few thousands of years ago we sat in Egypt and we had a great life as well. So we're remembering the great life in Egypt and not this redemption. Who needs this redemption? You know, it's throwing everything you had there besides love of others. What are we, crazy? So what are we celebrating? Someone misses that. To feel in exile. No one really understands what this is all about. Just imagine it. Before you need love towards others, really need it, where this is what you want. What does Moses say? Send my people, let my people go, I want to go out. But what do you need? You grew on my hands. In my hands, you were a prince in Egypt. A prince, what are you making this revolution for? What's wrong? I want love towards others. He's crazy. What's missing? You understand? This is what we have to understand. If we want to feel Egypt, true Egypt, as an exile, then it's only at the end of the process that a person undergoes in Egypt. Before that, he's satiated, filled with everything besides spirituality. And spirituality is called love towards others, bestowal. You see? So, you have a crazy nation that celebrates such a holiday. Celebrating what? That they once needed love of others. If we were to really clarify these things to the people, you're saying to read the Haggadah correctly. This requires real scrutiny and seeing, guys, where are we today? Are we at least somehow aiming for this today? To feel that we are willing to leave our great life for the sake of loving others, loving the Creator, mutual consideration, bestowal. Look what's happening between us. Look what we have. Are we even close to that? Do we even deserve celebrating Passover? What does freedom from enslavement means? It's freedom of my ego, where I have everything, and I want to run away from it. I hate it, I don't want it. I don't want this good food or confidence, or I don't care about confidence, about great life, about comfortability, about anything. I'm willing to get out and even die in the Red Sea. Drown in the Red Sea and choke in the water, or be dried completely in the desert. Tell that to your mother-in-law. See what she says. Well, yes.
It seems to me that what Moses asked, not Moses from history, but Moses here, that how do you explain to people without a point in the heart what Egypt is?
Nothing to explain. There's nothing to explain. You explain that Pharaoh pressured the people of Israel, didn't let them live as Jews there, and that's why they wanted to run away. They wanted to be independent. Today, thank God, we're independent. We don't need anything. We have everything. We have it all. Instead of Moses, we have Shimon Peres. Everything's great. You understand? The common people, what can you tell them? To interpret it correctly? Yes.
Many from the city of Beersheba says, I also just want a taste in life. I didn't come to study Kabbalah in order to love others. If I want to love others, it's
right.
Only because a Kabbalist tells me that this is the only solution. This is the way to get out of Egypt?
Bit by bit, you enter Egypt because you really feel bad. You want something, you don't know what. And you think that Kabbalah can probably give you fulfillment for that. Gradually, it all changes. The desire and the fulfillment, opposite the desire, they take a different form. We come closer to a point where I want to be floating in the air. Just like that, without feeling myself floating, as if, you know, just hanging in the air next to the 15th floor. Before that, I won't pray. I won't desire to hold on to the Creator. So that's where I want to be. This is something you gradually come to, from the garlics and onions and all that you have in the world to receive, to the demand that I must leave that world to receive. How? Whatever way there is. But bit by bit, this is done by the light. It's not that we can somehow be great at doing that, not your mind. Nothing can help the person with this. Only the meticulous work towards the environment. Yes, Gershon.
Why is this process of wanting to love others so hard and complicated?
It's not hard, it's not complicated, it's very simple.
The Egyptian plagues and so on.
There's a will to receive. I don't agree that it's complicated. It's complicated when we are complicated. There's a will to receive, and all that I feel and think in that will to receive for my self-benefit. How can I make a calculation that is not for self-benefit? Say that I dress into someone else. Dress into someone else and start making his calculation. From his side, we talked a little bit about psychoanalysis today, right? About Freud, who started this issue only 100 years ago or so. Freud, Einstein, they were kind of working in parallel about this. They were also friends. What am I trying to say? That the development of man after hundreds of thousands of years of development, only 100 years ago, people reached a point where the wise ones, they were smart, they were wise with regards to psychoanalysis, with regards to man's scrutiny on the corporeal level. But only 100 years ago, people started making these scrutinies of me, and I'm looking at myself from a side, these are the others, that's me, and so on. And there's a reason why they were Jewish also. But it's not that simple. You're saying it's also complicated. Just look at how many thousands of years of development we needed to go through in order to somehow begin to clarify just the beastly spirit of men. And all the more so if you talk about the actual spiritual soul. Because we don't want to dress into the others. We don't want to. Our society should simply force everyone to start dressing into the others. To start trying that, examining that. How do I look through the eyes of the others? Say that I'm dressing into someone else, and I want to feel what they want. These are exercises on the level of this world, psychological exercises. They don't belong to spirituality. It's all kind of still on the level of our world, our corporeal world. However, if you want further, please organize an environment that will begin to finally influence you. You're asking, why am I not advancing? Why does it take so long? Because you get no influence. There's no progress without influence. Where do you get spiritual discernments from? Only through the environment. Yes.
From Netanya and Haifa, they're asking about, can you give us some emphasis about dissemination during the Passover? What should we focus ourselves on if we take the theme of the Haggadah or anything else? What should we do?
We're filming many programs, TV programs, I hope, during the Passover. I don't know exactly what's planned, but all along the holidays, we should be thinking about what programs we're making, what things. Well, we study a lot, so we can also use that or specific excerpts from this for those days. Still, we also have a big archive. Let's hope that the friends who are in charge of our channel will scrutinize what's best for Israel during Passover to watch on our channel. That's our main dissemination, I think. That's it.
The question is towards completely new people that never met us before. Is there something about the tales of the holidays and so on?
For new people, creating a story that fits Passover is connecting the exile in Egypt to today's state in humanity, in recognizing the exile, the beginning of it, where we see in our world that our ego is ruining the world and it overpowers us, it controls us, and it doesn't let us any way to lift ourselves, and we're destroying ourselves. Who knows how it's going to end? And we suffer, yet we can't somehow better our life for ourselves and for our children, and that's called the control of Pharaoh. And when we begin to relate to our life this way and to our ego this way, we have to realize that the exodus from Egypt, salvation, redemption, can only happen when we connect together, as we see from the example of the children of Israel who came out of Egypt, that all the people are running away from the reign of the ego and they want to rise above it. That's called achieving a better life. If you talk about it in this kind of a simple manner for the common people, and you explain that this is our savior from all our problems with drugs and depression and divorce and violence, if you talk about that to the people, everyone can understand that. And everyone understands today that we can call this state an exile with respect to, as opposed to a good life. And redemption will be when we all manage to restrain our ego and connect together and live well as human beings. That's called redemption from troubles, from problems. Who doesn't want that? Everyone wants that. Now, if they ask, is it possible to do or not, then we tell them, okay, so let's see how the wisdom of Kabbalah offers us to do that. The power by which to rise from this egoistic life that buries us into or up to a life that allows us health and confidence and economy and safety and everything. This is possible. How? The wisdom of Kabbalah explains that, and this is why it becomes revealed. And this is how you gradually prepare them and bring them closer to the matter, and that we have a solution. And that's why the wisdom was concealed, and now it becomes revealed as the whole world enters this state of exile. And it's truly a dangerous state. So let's use the wisdom of Kabbalah. You still don't say exactly what's there, but you explain that the study of Kabbalah benefits the person, advances the person towards goodness. Are you lying? Of course not. But you're not saying that the person has to change. You're saying that the study itself is doing good to you. And this is how people gradually come closer to this. They receive a small illumination from this. Then they see that their ego is not good because they have to connect more. And how can we correct our ego? I'm not good towards others. No one is good towards the others, and so on. And this is how, in a simple manner, we would like to advertise this to everyone. And this is enough. That's all. Some of the people will rise above reason and they'll pass on the lights to all the others. And the others, who by the nature of their soul, they can't draw the lights for everyone, just like the common people in our world, they will receive the great lights that come from those individuals through them, and they'll use it all correctly as a mutual hug or a connection between everyone. That's it. This is how you can gradually bring the whole of humanity to correction, because not everyone needs to be like the greatest of the generation who rise above reason. Others simply use it.
Question coming from San Francisco. With respect to the nations, those who are not Jewish, during the Passover, are they somehow inferior spiritually?
Spiritual inferiority is everyone, because we're all inferior towards the Pharaoh that sits within us, and there is no difference between these and those. On the contrary, the people of Israel are servants towards the world. We are proud at serving others. That's a different thing. I'm proud in helping someone. So this forces me to appreciate them as greater than me. How else will I help them? Will I serve them? So there's no inferiority here. And everyone needs to be equal and connected as one unit. One unit means that everyone is equal. No one is more or less. No one. Could be one is dumb and the other is smart and the other is lazy and the other is hasty and whatnot. The connection can only be among equal. They're all equal.
I think the emphasis here was about meaning that they don't celebrate corporeally the Passover.
They can celebrate it if they want to. Why don't they belong to this? First of all, they belong to what's called the Yeshar Kel. That's Israel, towards the Creator. Two, they celebrate it like that. There was a group of Kabbalists who went through this shattering, and now we celebrate to identify with that group. It's not a nationality, it's not a nation, it's a group of Kabbalists. And everyone who wants to leave the present state into spirituality must appreciate that group who created the path, all the books of the instructions for us, and it allows us to take what they did, what they left to us, and advance accordingly. I see them as our teachers. That's it. I don't see it like I belong to a nation or don't belong to some nation. I see myself belonging to that group. And the same with anyone who has this desire to identify with them. And as you discover spirituality, you see that you're with them. That the group is not the people and friends around the world. That the group is mostly them. Is them and mostly them. The all those Kabbalists throughout the generations who became the group of Kabbalists. You discover that you're together with them in the group. Yes, Owen.
With respect to what you just said, how should a person tell about the exodus from Egypt today to other people? I think that it's worthwhile adding to that that immediately after the holiday on the 3rd of May, all over Israel will have introductory lectures. So if you get to talk to people and on the holidays, everyone has an opportunity to do that.
Perhaps we can show the details.
Okay, if you can show us, please.
No,
wait,
not
wait,
this,
that's the picnic.
Not this one. Okay, they'll find the right one.
About what you just said, probably many people heard about your wondrous explanation. They'll tell it to plenty of people. And, you know, the same way words come in, they also go out. Someone heard and forgot, but you can invite those people to an introductory lecture, and there you have a link, and
yes.
Over here is Confans.
So that's 3rd of May in all our centers in Israel. There is an introductory lecture open to anyone, introduction to Kabbalah. So people who are hearing us now, they don't need to come themselves, but they should send their relatives. Where's your mother-in-law? Right? There we go. Everything's connected to you, and an introductory lecture to the wisdom of Kabbalah about your life. That's Tuesday, the 3rd of May, all around Israel in the various centers. So, registration is free, just register in advance. Great, good.
When a person tries to get out of Egypt from self-love, then his ego undergoes blows. Now, to cope with them, the only thing you can do is turn to the Creator. Now, there's another ego that I know, a corporeal ego, that also undergoes blows. Family issues, security, livelihood, and so on. Now, there's no other attitude towards it, but none else besides me, because the Creator won't help.
No.
At least from experience, I didn't see that it helps.
Doesn't help, yeah?
No, not in these things. Turning to the Creator doesn't help in these things.
I don't know if he'll help you or not. I'll just tell you what is the correct attitude to this. And you once asked, and I told you, but you don't remember. We were driving, we were talking about this once, on the way from Toronto to New York, I think. I think you asked about it, and I even remember that I told you and when. It was in the middle of the road. The correct form to see each and every problem that happens with me, with my life, with my word, whatever my world, whatever it is, including the friends and my work and my family and other people, whatever, wherever it happens. First of all, I should look at it as a disturbance coming from the Creator. A disturbance that comes from the Creator. And I should look at it in a way that I am rising above that disturbance. It pains and it's not good, but I'm trying as much as I can with faith above reason, as we spoke about it earlier in the lesson. Perhaps we'll be able to find the combination between these two things. So despite the pain, despite the fact that it surfaces in me all the time and so on, I know that I have to make calculations above that. That's where I identify with the one who sends this to me, the Creator. Two, how do I actually relate to that thing? So I'm told, on the level of this world, all the problems that have to do with the person in this world, you have to also fix them just like everyone else in this world. That's all. Bank, workplace, family, health. The doctor has permission to heal. In short, you work just like a person in this world regularly. So there's two levels of attitude. First of all, you determine that it's disturbance coming from the Creator, and you want to manage with the Creator, and you want these disturbances because they allow you to rise above your reason and connect with Him. That's it. Now, in fact, you're relating to these disturbances correctly this way. You appreciate them. You respect them because they help you as much as you feel it in a bad way, as much as it eats your flesh and it stirs your emotions and nerves, and specifically because of that you can be above that. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, you go and fix these problems on the corporeal level just like everyone else. That's the right attitude. I remember this. I already explained this to you. But you were very new.
I understand that we have to solve them in our world. I'm talking now only about the attitude. If it's work amongst the friends, the spiritual work I'm trying to perform in the group, then I turn to the Creator with all these disturbances because He's the only one that can help me. This is the only thing that I can do. Now, with all these problems, with my inner attitude towards them, the Creator can't help me about this. So what is the attitude towards it to simply transcend? Because there's no point in asking Him to solve my security problems or any other problems that I have. Like we study in Kabbalah, the only thing that He answers is the one thing, whether I want to be in love towards others. So what's the attitude towards it? To simply transcend?
Didn't understand.
What's the inner attitude towards a problem?
What problem? For example?
Security, livelihood, health.
You have to fix these problems in the level of this world, like everyone else.
Obviously, but I'm asking about the inner attitude.
The attitude should be that it's the Creator doing this on purpose to you, and those two levels must be simultaneously. You have to kill someone who's trying to kill you. You have to go sweat in your work and work hard because the Creator invites this for you, and if he doesn't give you any other opportunity and so on. You have to see these things resulting from Him, coming from Him, and treat them like that, a disturbance that you're receiving, help made against, and still you work with it. You don't drive Pharaoh away. You enjoy the blows that Pharaoh receives, and only on top of these blows you can rise above. The Pharaoh is really my flesh. It's the closest thing I feel. It's the interior of my heart. It's the most sensitive point I have. When you touch it, it's like, you know, it's like my baby. That's Pharaoh. You understand? It's these things. It's the most important and sensitive things that a person has.
This is what I'm asking. It's not that Pharaoh. Pharaoh is what awakens towards my against my love towards the friends that I get blows and health, family, and so on. It's not the same Pharaoh. So I'm asking, why does the Pharaoh undergo blows with this respect?
Why does the person receive blows on that level?
Yeah, it's not the Pharaoh that I have to correct somehow.
Yes, but these things, they pull you away from the scrutinies. You see how many Kabbalists were actually sick, went through different troubles. What does Rabash write? That the Creator created shameful situations from them, that the society disrespected them, and so on. And it was in order to give them room to rise above. Yes, there's nothing you can do about it. And besides that, just like we read from the article Revelation and Concealment of the Creator, then you see that the person starts seeing that there are problems around him and problems around the people around him and so on, and many, and it's all a result of the burdening of the heart. That's it. Only thing that happens is that the desire is added, it increases, and then you start feeling for problems within you or others.
When the Pharaoh reveals against the love of friends, against the connection,
with it, all kinds of other problems can appear to you as well.
Okay, so I opened the book, but when there is a problem that unfolds against health or any other thing in this world, I'm not standing in front of the book to help me. It doesn't help with that. It helps only with the love of friends. The Creator helps only to connect with others.
Wait,
he doesn't help in these things.
No. Sorry. The fact that you feel bad, let's say you have a fever, I don't know, all kinds of things, does it help you for love of friends? Can you focus on it? Can you focus on love of friends? No. So you have to pray now. Why not? It's a disturbance. There's none else besides Him. Where are all the things coming from? Only from the Creator, on many different levels. You have to reach the goal. And your donkey is sick. Can't carry you. What can you do? Let it die. You need it on your way. Why do you relate to this world in detachment towards the spiritual work. Everything you see, everything that happens, even when you don't see well and you have to replace your glasses or something, those are disturbances that are disturbances. They are probably in some way, by overcoming them, I'm still doing something that progresses me. But the question is, what am I doing with or without the glasses? Don't disconnect anything that happens to you from the one source until you come to the point where you feel in exile. But the exile is an exile from bestowal and love of others. That's the whole Torah. Where do the people of Israel come afterwards? They come to be one man in one heart. Love thy friend as thyself. Arvut, mutual guarantee. That's what you wanted? Please, that's what you will receive. That's why the exile is felt exactly against that condition. This condition of arvut, of mutual guarantee, connection as one man and one heart. Let's hope we achieve the exile then.
Few announcements. The virtual group studying Kabbalah together every Wednesday. Also today there is a lesson for the Israeli virtual group. This lesson is not translated. It's on CAB COIL. And also there is a picnic for the students in Israel during the Pesach on the 20th of April. We'll have a meal, conversation with Rav Lightman, activities, and mainly a lot of fun and connection. So it's on Passover starting 10 a.m. in Tel Aviv, in Parque Elkon. And of course you can find the details on the Hebrew site. Also, tomorrow, which is a Thursday, we will have the weekly portion, Parashat HaShavua, at 7 p.m. Please stay with us. It's translated Thursday evening, 7 p.m. So we're having a special day of broadcast, and like every Thursday,
אדם הוא עולם קטן, עבורו נברא העולם. אהבת חברים מחפש הוא כל החיים. אהבת חברים מחפש הוא כל החיים. דרך ליבו של חבר רואים עולם. Yeah, yeah, yeah. הקשר בין